Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show. I am Michelle Berquist, your host this morning. But more importantly, our leading lady this morning is Wendis Fernandez-Brinkard, and she is the Vice President over at Trilogy Financial Services. And today we're going to talk about women and investing, not so much the how-to, but the mindset of women in investing and how that's different maybe than men. So anyway, good morning, and Wendis, are you with us?
I am here.
You're here. And I almost want to out you a little bit because I know that you are secretly doing things as we are talking on the radio this morning. We'll let
Isn't
people just kind of wonder.
Isn't that what most women end up doing? Don't we all try multitask?
Do you mind sharing? Because it's like, seriously, this just puts you in the bucket of the multitasker. I just would love for our listeners to know that you were multitasking this morning on a Monday.
I'm having my hair dyed as we speak.
I love it. I'm sorry. Let's start the radio show off with that. So are you saying that balance is not something you have in business? I'm just curious.
Certainly don't have a lot of spare time to do this stuff on at other moments.
Oh, you were the only person I can get away with this. That's what I love about you. But, you know, I know we're on a serious topic this morning, but I'm hoping we can have a little fun. And, you know, I mean, when people think of financial advisors, I mean, I got to say, it's kind of like we know we need it. We know it's important to our future. But, you know, when you get kind of around to it, it's one of those things that's not urgent and critical, and it kind of goes on the, well, I'll think about it someday list. Do you kind of agree?
I do agree. And then when people think about it, they read all these articles, and they have all of these preconceived ideas of what it actually is. And that is the second set of issues that goes along with it.
You know, I read an article, and this is, you know, again, because we are part of an organization called Connected Women of Influence, and I have to say, it's like, you know, there's a quote-unquote no men bashing in our group, but one of the things that I really like to kind of, like, look at is the differences between how business women versus business men do things. And I remember reading an article, and again, we're going to go all over the place. We'll hear about your background in a minute, because I should do that first, but I don't follow the rules very well. But I recently read an article, and it was on women in investing. And it really kind of came to the almost kind of, you know, across the board that some of the things that women, you know, think about when it comes to investing is they're unsure, they're not confident, they're risk averse. I mean, what are some of the things, do you see that with women in investing? Because that's really your specialty, or one of them, your specialty and niche in being a financial advisor, correct?
Yes. And the problem with women is that they would rather stay in the bank and fail at their retirement goals, you know, because they're too afraid to take risk, whereas men just take the risk, and therefore they end up having more money in the long run. And it's hard. The hardest thing to explain to someone is that you're not making any money at the bank, especially right now. Like when I first started in the industry, and shut me up if I'm talking too long, when I first started in the industry, CD rates were like 5%. Right now,
oh, yeah.
half
what
a
is
percent.
It?
Half
yeah, I was
a gonna percent.
Say point.
And you and to get more than that, you're looking at like 0.75% for a 5-year CD. Are you crazy? Like,
so what? But what do you see as the big thing with women is when they sit? I mean, first of all, getting them to sit down with you, and I think is first and foremost. Do you find that women, you know, defer to the male counterpart in their life, or, you know, their husband, or do they come in together? I mean, how do you get a woman to come in then if, you know, they're in the situation where they'd rather, like, sit with the bank and get point whatever percent interest?
You know, a lot of my business comes off of referrals or from people who have already met me. So for the most part, I've already kind of worked to develop some sort of a relationship. So,
mm-hmm.
like, if someone is referring me to another woman, then they come to me because they feel a little bit of comfort in knowing that one of their friends already is working with me. The best example I could think of is recently I had a husband and wife, and it was the wife that was terrified. The husband's like, whatever my wife wants to do is fine. But her daughter got her to come in. She would not have come in otherwise. So it's really more about women like to use who other women are using. They feel comfortable. It's an established relationship.
I think that's a great concept. I mean, once you get them in, it's like, what are some of the fears and concerns that you hear most with women as it relates to their financial future? I mean, do they even understand stocks and the different, you know, funds and caps and middle, you know, mid-cap, small, not that
no.
I know, trust me, but it's like, how do you educate them? How do you get them, you know, to look at the big picture for investing?
I definitely have, I would say two different types of clients, the clients that want the education and the clients that just want to work with someone they trust. Like I have, you know, two classic attorney clients where they don't care. They needed to work with someone they trusted. That's my job. They don't want the details. So they are, I guess you could almost say, like my ideal clients, because I can actually do what I need to do to help them have success. On the flip side is the client who wants education but doesn't understand what I'm talking to them about, and then gets so shut down by fear of not understanding it that they do nothing. And that's the biggest hurdle to get past. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And it's like, and again, you know, I mean, women, we're wired differently. I mean, you might as well go with that. But I do, you know, you look at the statistics, and I mean, it's just, everybody knows this. Women live longer than men. You know, I mean, there's a better chance of a woman being the head of household later in years than a man because of just the age, you know, deference and how we live longer. It's like, you know, do you feel more and more women are coming around to the idea that, like, they need to take control of their financial future? And what kind of do you see as trends, you know, that are happening in maybe a good way? And also, it's like, you know, the fear way. I'm kind of looking for your kind of, like, what you see on both sides.
I see that women are taking control of the finances more, and I'm also seeing that they're not commingling finances as much as they used to. I have a lot of couples that meet with me separately that they don't do their financial planning together. They both use me. They both, you know, want to retire at the same time, but they, you know, maybe it's a second marriage situation. Maybe it's just, you know, my mother taught me never to trust men, which I've had that before. So even though they're in a happy marriage, she would never joint share assets. So it's different. Like, I see more women being more guarded about it. And I've had a few instances where people contacted me because they didn't like the advisor they were working with because they didn't feel like the male advisor was taking the time to understand what their concerns were and communicate. If someone asks a question, it deserves a proper answer, not just a, that's my job, don't worry about it.
Well, and I gotta go with you on this one because, you know, I will say that is one of the things that I hear, and it's in different industries. You know, women will say, you know, I went in to see this advisor under whatever umbrella, banking, financial, insurance, you know, the big financial pieces, and they'll say, you know, I felt like the dude, you know, was talking down to me. And it's like, you know, you are one of very, very few financial advisors are women. Is that correct as far as the statistics and who makes it? In financial advisor?
Yeah.
I mean,
very,
like
few.
10%? I mean, do you know what the stats are? Because
I don't remember the stat. I think in the top 100 advisors, there aren't any. So I'm trying to remember the stat. We just heard it last week, but it's low. It's especially low when you get into the higher ranks.
Well, and I think that alone, you know, I think and more women are becoming kind of in charge of their financial destiny. So I think that's cool that you can sit down with them. But, you know, and again, we're unpacking a lot this morning, but, you know, when you sit down with somebody and they first come into you, regardless of their situation, and I have to say, I'm a proud client working with you. You know, my experience was really positive in sitting down with you, but I'd look at that and say, you know, when you first sit down with somebody, how do you uncover where they are? Because we've been through so many roads of here's this assessment, let me do a financial profile for you. I mean, that was, I think, was it the 90s when it's like every financial advisor was doing a free financial, you know, assessment, and they would kind of put together a profile for somebody. Do you do that, or how do you kind of set yourself apart from maybe every other financial advisor when you first work with somebody? I'm curious.
So for me, when a client comes in, I have a whole process where I try to get to know them. It's, you know, a 5-page. It's not a questionnaire. It's me just sort of asking questions. It would look like a questionnaire if you were to flip through it, because ultimately I'm getting these answers. But it's more like this. This is a conversation between us. That's what I want it to be when I meet with a client. It's a conversation between us about them. And for whatever reason, I feel like I have great success in getting people to open up to me. So it's, you know, there are some boring, I always call it when I get to the boring pertinent information page, you know, I can't open an account without this. But even asking some of those questions, like, where were you born? It's kind of neat to learn that, like, oh, when did you move here? Or how many kids do you have? And some of that stuff, it would be boring pertinent information, but it is actually, you can turn it into a conversation. And I like having people talk about their kids and, you know, where they were originally from and what college they went to. And it's nice to learn that.
Well, and I like, you know, knowing you, it's like you have a couple of specialties, you know, that you kind of focus on. And I, for our listeners, I don't think people know kind of your background, but do you mind kind of sharing? It's like, how did you even get into, you know, to being a financial advisor? It's like, you know, like you said, there's not many women. And for those of our listeners that don't know, it's like you're not very old.
I'm not very old.
but have a lot of expertise behind you. So how did you get to being in financial services? I'm curious.
Well, I think I've always been a very, very motivated student. So I went through college really quickly. And when I got out of college, I was only 22 and I was, you know, I just turned 22 and I was out there going, I don't know what I'm going to do. Now what? So, oh, I finished college and everyone told me that was the next step. So then I just started putting my resume out there. What did we use back then? I don't even know if we still use Monster or anything, but Career Builder and Monster and all that stuff was where you post it. Well, as it turns out, my firm was searching those sites for people in my situation, you know, looking to build a business and apprentice into an industry, because I knew with my degree that I had a lot of, I could do a lot, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. So they called me in for an interview. Mm-hmm. When I came in, it really just, it was as simple as I liked what they had to say, the career was. And I think people believe that you can go to school for this or, you know, being a financial advisor is about hands-on learning experience. You get brought in under someone, you learn how to do financial planning under a firm, and thank God I was brought in at a very young age with the right firm. So 10 years into it, you know, and being so young, I am a sponge for learning things. It was just,
but you're
time,
crazy.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy for you because I don't think the thing you're not telling people, and especially listeners, is you're out of college. Okay, first of all, you're like the first person I've ever met and known that has found a job online with Monster or some of those.
Right.
I know people get them every day, but that's one thing. I mean, but the other part that I'm fascinated with is, you know, what you're doing doesn't equal salary and payday. I mean, you're coming into a situation where you start out, it's ground zero, isn't it? I mean, didn't they bring you on? And so you got to bring in your own biz.
It was brutal. I would never, like, look back and say I'd ever want to do that twice. But, you know, I graduated college. I didn't have anything. I had some student loan debt. So I had to move back in with my mom and get my feet on the ground and start this. But, you know, I was lucky. It was a good time to be doing this, you know, in my life. Do you know what I mean? I was 22.
What was your major in college? I mean, what did you leap off
international,
to?
International. My major in college was international relations with a minor in peace and justice. So I went into college thinking, like, oh, you know, I want to go into the foreign service. But I grew up in a family where my grandmother, you know, owned 13 properties in Ocean Beach, 13 rental properties. I grew up in a family of, you know, budget and money management and rental management. And my mom and dad owned a travel agent. So I was always more business inclined. And when I originally interned doing government background checks. And what I found was that I showed up on your door to do a background check, and I'm here to literally find everything you've ever done wrong in your life. And that wasn't a good feeling. And I knew I wanted
scary.
To be a business owner. Yeah, it was. And I wanted to interact with people, and the financial planning just, it was positive. I get to sit down with someone, and instead of being there to uncover your dirt, and some of the dirt was ugly, I'm there to uncover, like, how am I going to help you reach your goals? It's a lot more fun. And it's that same intense, I get to run numbers, I get to say, if you do this, you get to do that. And I don't think that I understood back then what I was getting into, but looking back, like, this is the most fabulous, perfect fit career for me. It fits everything about who I am and what I want to do.
And when you first interviewed with Trilogy, because that was the first place that you went to, correct?
Yeah.
Trilogy.
So
when they interviewed
you. first job out of college and been there for 10 years.
Yeah, but even more than that, it's like, okay, you're out of college. Great, we're all looking for the salary and to pay off our college loans, right? I mean, I remember what mine was. If somebody said commission, I would have said bye-bye. So what was it that was so exciting to you about working with Trilogy from the kind of like the woo factor from the very beginning and the fact that they got you to work commission only? I mean, I get that you liked it and it's helping people meet their goals, but what was it that really caught you to say, I think I can build a future for you, you know, in this industry? I find that fascinating.
I attribute it to too stupid to fail, like too dumb to fail. I have no idea. I look back. I don't know what I was thinking. I like taking calculated risks. I'm very, very determined. Obviously, graduating early, you know, I'm very determined. And so I just think I saw it as, this is going to be a great career. I love this. And what better time, you know?
Enough said. I think that's the most awesome thing. But, you know, I got to say, it's like, what was kind of your big learning lesson, you know, in the beginning as far as, oh, my gosh, you know, the reality that you got to sell to, you know, perform to be able to bring in the bacon? What was the kind of hardest things you learned quickly about that piece of the pie?
I have to own what I'm recommending. So, you know, you're apprenticing in, so you're trusting that people above you are acting from the right place. They're disseminating information to you. It doesn't mean that their values are aligned with yours. So I had to go back after a few years in the business and really own that I didn't like some of the products my clients were in, and I had to work to change that. So 10 years in, now I can look at every single client I have, and they are where I want them to be, where I know that they are going to be okay. But this is a big trust industry, and you can't just take someone's word for it. You need to do the research. You're putting the client in. It's your license. It's your responsibility.
Well, and you know, that leads to something else. I mean, if we go flip back, we're in 2012 right now. Let's go back to that wonderful year called 2009, you know, in 2008, the beginning of the kind of economic meltdown. I mean, what has been, you know, one or two things that you've seen your, I can't even imagine the stuff you experienced with clients. So, I mean, total panic?
You could break steel on my shoulders in 2008. It was intense. It was like, you know, that was my first big recession because I started in this industry at the end of the last recession. So I felt ramifications of the tech bubble, but I had not been through a recession. So for your first recession as an advisor, to have it be the worst recession we've seen since the Great Depression, maybe a little intense. I was lucky because by that point, I had already owned everything my clients were in, meaning I had taken responsibility and done the research. So going into it, I was very confident that when people held were the right investments and would get them through if they stayed the course. When people didn't stay the course, those were the only people who saw failure. So I lost two clients in the recession, and in both instances, they went to cash when I told them not to, and they never made up the losses. Everyone else, you know, it's not pretty. I'm not going to say that everyone is, you know, made tons of money, but if you made back the money you lost, you held your course, then when we come and see a good period of recovery, you will see the growth that you need. Does that make sense? Yes.
No, it totally does. I mean, and again, it's like, you know, I grew up with the whole idea, you know, my family came from Northwestern Mutual, so I think I shared that with you, that my grandfather and my dad were at Northwestern, and they would, you know, everything was life insurance and disability insurance, and, you know, it wasn't really investing. And it's like then you kind of grow up and go, you know, the one thing that I always learned was the dollar cost averaging to make consistent, you know, came by, you know, on a consistent basis. But is that, I mean, what would be two things that you would, and I know you have to be very careful here about advising on the phone, which you can't, but what would maybe be two suggestions you would give people if they're considering whether it's like, you know, to sit down with somebody or they haven't or they're worried about their financial future? I mean, what would be two things you would suggest to our listeners this morning as they consider their financial future?
I don't see very many people that retire comfortably that didn't sit down with someone and they had a game plan. And sitting down with someone, it's not too late to sit down with someone in your 50s, but I will tell you, the earlier you have someone help you get a plan together, the easier it's going to be for you. So
you could live under the umbrella of like coulda, shoulda, woulda, huh? Because, you know, I still think of the initial 2000 I put in my first IRA when I was 21. It's gone. Wish I would have left it there. I was told to leave it there, but do we listen? No. So there's my advice. Take your first $2,000 when you're 20, stick it in an IRA, and don't touch it again.
And the second thing I try to tell people, someone's always like, well, how much should I be saving? And if you're not going to meet with an advisor, that's an open-ended question. But the bottom line is, my grandmother told me, you have to save 10% of your income. And I scoffed at that, never took it seriously. I will tell you that the people who didn't meet with advisors but saved 10% of their income starting, you know, in their 20s, and they never deviated from the 10%, they kept it invested in their 401k plans, they get to retire early. Because if you save 10% of your income, you're trying to replace 100% of your income for the rest of your life. And I do not understand how people think that 10% for 100% is a bad equation.
You know, it's interesting.
It's not
on the
easy one.
No, but one of the words that you guys, I'm putting you guys all into a bucket here, that I hang around with a lot of entrepreneurs, right? Women business owners, that kind of thing. I know you do as well, but, you know, the women business owners that I kind of like interact with, it's like one of the things that I think is almost anti to what you do is that most people that own their own businesses don't want to retire. How would you use a different word than retire? Because I think that's central to why maybe some people don't want to come see you, is the people I know that own businesses, they don't want to retire. I mean, they would like to not work as hard. So I don't know what the word would be, but I'm kind of curious if you find that people who own their own businesses are like, yeah, no,
absolutely.
It's like, I don't ever want to retire. So why would they need to
you
come
have
see
to
you?
You have to make work an option. You have to get to the point where with or without your business, work is an option. And you can't always sell your business, as we have seen with a financial downturn. You know, in this downturn, we learned a lot, and your business isn't always sellable, unfortunately, especially not when you need it to be. But you for me, it's about making work an option. You know, my husband plans on retiring in 10 years. And honestly, his idea of retirement is that he just stops having to aggressively grow his business. So he's your classic business owner who doesn't really plan on retiring, but he'll still be making some money. But at some point, what if you were to become sick and you're not able to keep up on your existing book? And then all of a sudden, your existing book starts going elsewhere, or your business isn't as, I don't know how to describe it. You have to have the ability to retire if you need to.
No, I'm totally with you in this because, you know, my husband, I'm like the poster child for, you know, what if. I know that's a different competitor that talks about that, but, you know, it is the what could happen that might, that maybe never will. I mean, that really kind of like puts it into perspective, right?
Yeah, absolutely. My husband, when he had cancer, he was sick. You know, we didn't expect that. He was 42 when he was sick. You know, who expects to have cancer at 42? No one. So, you know, we're still feeling the financial ramifications from that. And that was 4 years ago. Oh, God, it was longer than that now that I say it out loud. But time just keeps going by. But it's that you don't know. And so, for me, it's not about retirement, like putting you out to pasture. It's about creating the ability so that you get up and go to work because you want to, not because you have to.
I love that. And, you know, I know we have only a few minutes left, but I want to kind of go down, you know, you and building your practice, building your business. I mean, for you, what have been maybe, you know, especially, I mean, we all know the economic downturn was a tough thing, but, you know, rising from the brink, so to speak, what have been maybe two of the biggest challenges that, you know, you've seen in 10 years, or maybe there's 20 of them, but, you know, what's the hardest thing about what you do and building your practice? Because it seems to me there's just tons of financial advisors out there. I mean, how do you set yourself apart? How do you, you know, overcome just a sea of everybody that does the same thing out there?
Okay, so for me, I feel like when I have met with clients who've interviewed other advisors, their comments to me have been, you're the first advisor who didn't start with you. Like, it's not about me, it's about the client. If they want to know about me, that's great. I have a website, my bio's on my website. If they want to know, I'm happy to tell them anything they want to know. But really, I think the biggest mistake people make is they don't make it about the client. Another aspect of what people make is that they try to put everyone in the same product. I'm sorry, there's not one product fits all. One financial plan doesn't fit all. I build every single financial plan to the client specifically, and I make that known. So when someone calls and says, well, what are your costs? I wish I had an easy answer. It is just not, there's just not a flat cost because I do not know what you need. And until I meet with you, I can't advise you on what's best for you or what it would cost because we have to have that first initial meeting so I can get a sense for what you need. The biggest, the hardest challenge to overcome is that people are their worst enemies. You know, to get their, you know, I think you know what I mean, what I'm trying to say here is like so many people don't succeed in financial planning because they don't take the advice of their advisor. They think they have a better strategy themselves and they don't make decisions and they take too long to make decisions. When a plan has been presented to you, it is, especially in this time where finance, like where the industry and where the news and everything is so volatile, you have to be willing to sit down and make a decision in a timely fashion or you're just killing yourself.
I love that. And it's like, you know, for you on the approach of the clients, but, you know, what have you been challenged with as a financial advisor? I mean, what's been the hardest thing for you to either overcome or deal with? You know, I love what you said about, you know, clients and focusing on them because it's not about you. And usually when you deal with a financial advisor, you get their pedigree of all their acronyms and you're like, I don't get it. I don't understand, but okay, you sound important. Do you know what I mean? But shift to the challenges part because you've been in this industry for 10 years. So what's been the biggest, you know, issue for you? I mean, because from what, you know, I know about you and the people that I hear who talk about you in a good way, it's like you're building a thriving practice. But what has been some of the hardest things you've had to deal with in building your practice?
I think that the biggest thing is time management and compartmentalizing what, you know, I have two young kids. I adopted them, so it wasn't like I spent, you know, 9 months pregnant on top of this all. But, you know, all of a sudden I had two young babies, and then I had to realize, oh, you know, I have to make every single second I'm at work count. Because I'm great when I'm with my clients and I, you know, but I don't have the flexibility to work till 9 every night. And I didn't realize how much I was working until all of a sudden I had to be home at 5. And
wow.
Then it was like, whoa, oh, you mean I can't just stay up till 9 and not see my kids for a few days?
yeah.
It's the biggest challenge for me. And actually, since I put hours of operation down for everyone to understand clearly, I've been busier because now people know when I'm seeing clients and they make the time and it's so much easier now that I have everything like this is when I work. I can make accommodations, but this is when it's ideal. And, you know, so basically my biggest challenge is, you know, time. Whose isn't?
No, I love that. And I love that. And I know since you've adopted your two kids, I mean, that is definitely life-changing. And it's like, you know, balance and, you know, where are your priorities. But, you know, for you, it's like your business is just as much a priority as your family because that's what brings in the bacon. So, I mean, for women who are, you know, moms, I'm just, and businesswomen especially, it's like, you know, we always want to ask the question, can women have it all? And it's like, I'm curious on your front. It's like, what's been... You know, you sound like you balance your time really well. How do you do that? I mean, how do you post your office hours? How do you balance your time, you know, so that you are making it happen on both fronts, you know, being the mom
and at the same time? Yeah, no, I'm a bona fide workaholic. So at least going into having children, my husband knew that. And I have a lot of energy, and I still make sure everything runs okay at home, and I have great team support at home. So my hours of operation are on my email signature, and that was a change that I made probably about 9 months ago. And the amount of comments I get from clients like, oh, thank you. I know when you can see clients. Can you meet then? Like, they don't even ask for the off times because it's posted so cleanly in my email. It's just having the right team at home helps, and having a husband who knows that I get to be the workaholic is also really awesome.
Oh, I think that's great. I hope Kurt listens to this so he can hear how hard you work. I mean, and we're on the downhill slide. So is there, you know, how do people reach you if they're curious about investing or they want to get a hold of you? Do you mind sharing your contact info with our listeners?
I have no problem sharing my contact info. my email is my first name, .Fernandez. So Windus.Fernandez@TrilogyFS.com. And then my office line. And Michelle, do I need to spell that?
Yeah, I would. Windus, W-I-N-D-U-S, right?
Yes. .Fernandez, F-E-R-N-A-N-D-E-Z, @TrilogyFS.com. TRILOGY, S as in Frank, S as in Sam, .com. My office line is 858-755-6696, extension 3169.
And as we wrap up, what's one little suggestion you would make to any women that's sitting on the fence about, you know, investing? Give us one thing. We'll end on a high note.
Just don't wait. The time is not on your side when it comes to this. You have to start as soon as possible.
Love it. Wendis, thank you so much for being on with us today. And for our listeners, it's like I hope you got a couple of tips more from how Wendis and how a woman who's in financial advising, vice president of a company, started, been there 10 years, makes it work. Because I just, my heart goes out to you, because any woman who is a mom, you know, that manages that in business is amazing to me. So with that, that's our show for today. Wendis, thanks for your time. I'm Michelle Berquist. It's been my sincere pleasure to be your host today. I hope you'll listen in to Women Leading the Way Radio next Monday, because we will talk to another leading lady on what it's like to be in business today. So thanks to all of our listeners. You have a great week, and we will catch you next Monday morning at 9 a.m. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.